Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, thanks for tuning in once again. The whole team is here. Former sporting director and team boss George Donaldson, the voice of Rally Colin Clark, Dirtfish senior staff writer David Evans, and me, Rally fan Lisa O'Sullivan. And as we head to the end of the 2020 season, we thought it might be fun to relive great championship deciders of the past. Now, I've been making a bit of a list, David Evans. Here it is.
I've just got to ask you one thing, Lise, before we get started. This is a bit of a point of production order. You know when do that clappy thing that we've just done?
Yep.
Why do you always say that'll do and sound quite disappointed because the fact we've all clapped? I tried to clap properly. Did I get it wrong?
The whole idea is that you should all clap like a clapperboard, and the sync that would be that you're all clapping at the same time. But in
Should we ever go live? See what the listeners think. Shall we?
Okay.
We can actually count it down.
You forget I'm editing this.
5, 4,
okay.
3, 2, 1. Oh. Oh, I seem to have jumped the start.
You see my point?
I said that'll do.
Right, sorry. Let's get on with Monza.
Carry on.
And for everybody else, just because we are recording live, that is so that I can get them all in order so that I can just take out the bits I don't like.
You never get us in order.
No. Anyway, I've been making a bit of a list. So my list is this. 1998, 2001, 2007, 2009, and 2018, David Evans. What do they all have in common?
Great, great, great championship finales.
Right down to the final round.
I'll counter that with...
Final stage, final 500 metres.
I'll counter that with the first ever in 1979, which actually was decided by 1 point. And Colin Clark, if you can get one of the two main protagonists that year, I will buy you a cup of coffee next time. Come on.
I'll tell you who it was. I'll tell you who it was.
I have won my coffee.
George, wait a second. It's Bjorn Vaaldegaard.
Yes. All right, who was second?
And Walter Roll.
No!
Oh.
You buy me a coffee.
Well, I got one. You just asked for one. Who was the second?
Bjorn was the champion. Bjorn was the champion in 79, wasn't he?
Yeah, of course he was, George. Why did you say he was second then? No, I said one of two, because Hannah was
one
second.
Of two. Hannah.
Now, David, I have another one for you then. Which other championship year was decided by 1 point in the list that Lisa
2009.
Gave us? Correct.
2009. Correct. Micah and Loeb.
Let's start with that because now we're playing a fact off, and anyone who's sitting there's going, but hang on a sec, what about 1981 when Ari Vatanen and Keith Freckeland were at it? And I don't know anything about that. I just know it's fact. Let's talk about 2009, and then we'll chuck in all the other ones because I do remember Mikko Hirvonen heading into the forests Hirvonen led the championship and Loeb led the rally, which was putting him in the winning position. So the only way that Hirvonen was going to win the championship was if he beat Loeb.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Mikko led the championship for quite a while, didn't he? Because there was a series of issues, wasn't there, through those events? He crashed. Sebastian crashed in Greece, had the big shot in Greece.
And Poland.
No. Poland, he didn't crash because I almost fell out with him about that because I suggested he crashed in... But it wasn't a crash. It was a collision between the front wheel and a tree root. It wasn't a tree stump.
Right.
And then Finland. Finland wasn't great for Loeb. And then, of course, Australia, they won and they lost the win, didn't they?
They were penalised, yeah.
Yeah, for something.
Well, it was no compliance on a suspension part. Remember, it was an underweight suspension part, I think it was. So but you know, it all came down to it, that year. It came down to a couple of things, because if you remember, that was also the year of Jari Mäty's most inglorious moment in Poland.
Yeah. Remember when you had that? Oh my God, Colin! Yeah. What a horrible one to remember.
It was, but that had a direct effect, because remember, Mikko lost by a single point.
That's right.
Now, Loeb had a dreadful rally Poland, as we've already mentioned, the coming together with a tree root, not the crash into the tree stump. and he was, the Citroën manipulated the leaderboard so much just to try and get him a single point. They stopped Konrad Rautenbach for 15 minutes in one stage, just so that Loeb could get 1 point. And they were quite happy with that. And then Jari Matti Latvala, driving for Ford, teammate of Mikko Hirvonen, stuffs it up on that final.
Gives him another point.
Gives him another point, which wins him the championship.
Also, Cole, don't forget, also really important, in Sardinia earlier that year, Latvala had just come off the back of that big shunt in Portugal, where he'd rolled down the mountain.
Oh, that was incredible, yeah.
And he was winning in Sardinia.
Yeah.
And Mikko is second. And we asked Malcolm, will you turn him around? No, I won't, because it's really important that Jari Mäty takes the confidence from the win to build him back up after Portugal. Didn't turn him around. And if Malcolm had turned him around in Sardinia, then again, Mikko would have been champion. Yeah. Lost by a point. Incredible.
And one more thing to add to Mikko would have been champion if that bonnet pin hadn't gone. Remember the bonnet pin that went over that manufactured jump, you know, and it lost him time on that final loop of stages.
But would he have beat?
He had to get out of the car for those who are, again, not entirely au fait, because we're just all getting giddy now with the excitement.
Oh, utterly giddy. I'm very giddy,
the bonnet flew open, was flapping around, and they had to stop the car to get out and rip it off and chuck it into the forest.
I think I've got to say,
bonnet somewhere.
I'm just excited that I can actually remember something for once. That's all.
This is just turning into a dementia test for me. I'm passing it with the flying colours, guys. Thank you.
But you've got to say, though, would actually, in a fair fight, would Mikko have beaten Loeb on that rally GB?
Well, hang on. You're suggesting then that rally, in its intrinsic sense, is not fair. Rally's all about survival, managing your luck, getting the best out of everything in every circumstance, and Mikko had done a better job up until the last event than Loeb. Is Loeb ultimately faster than Mikko? Yeah. Normally, you'd put your money towards the Loeb side of that quite heavily. Yeah.
Yeah. So in that respect, the championship went to the right person.
Well, I had no idea that I've always liked Jari Mäty massively, and now after this conversation, I've got a different view of him. He's the pantomime villain, isn't he? He is. Captain Hook of the Peter Pan rallying world.
If we thought that it's that season, isn't it?
It's that season, yes. It's the pantomime season in Britain, people.
Well, it's not. Not this year, it's not.
Well, it's not, yeah. Well,
if we thought that was close, if we thought 09 was close, well, aren't we overlooking, going into the championship decider in 09, there was a point between them. Going into the championship decider in 95, they were dead level. That surely has to be the closest championship fight ever. Probably we won't
tell us.
Oh no, we don't need to, Lise, because we did like 62 hours.
There's a lovely video on YouTube as well, isn't there? A lovely dirt fish video, very, David.
Very lovely video.
You and I looking rather fetching in our dirt fish parkas.
Yeah. I'm regretting that hat now. Don't let me wear that hat again.
But again, looking at 95, I mean, it was quite a heavily manipulated result to get it tied going into that last event. So a manipulation of results via moving drivers around, not new, not unusual. Are we going to see it this year, guys? Are we going to see it this year?
Before we do that, 1998, we have spoken about that already this year, Mäkinen and Sainz. That has to be the most dramatic championship deciding finish.
It was huge, and George was right in
it
the middle
awful.
Of it.
It was absolutely awful.
But the way that it was decided was shocking.
Tell us, George. Yeah. Tell us again from your point of view. Sorry to rip open those scars.
Well, I mean, Carlos just driving such a phenomenally careful rally. I mean, not doing what Carlos likes to do, but doing what you have to. going for his third world championship, and he'd been close more than once or twice after his first two with Toyota. And then the engine blew up. I mean, Toyota engines don't blow up. They're super reliable. And I know we did a wee bit about it earlier this year.
It blew up.
It blew up between the flying finish and the stop line pretty well, wasn't it? By the time the car stopped, and it basically, it's a bit of a debate about what happened. I mean, Carlos says that there was an intrinsic weakness in the engines at that time, and granted, Marcus had retired from that engine with an engine failure, which was most unusual. And I remember looking back, was that an issue? Marcus wouldn't necessarily be getting first choice engines. And I mean, the difference between a first choice engine and a second choice engine might be 2 horsepower. They'll be built exactly the same way. So it wouldn't be a build issue with the engine. It would have been a mapping issue on the car, which leans towards the story that I had about that someone had been playing around with that a little bit, not deliberately, not to cause a problem, but I think someone was using Carlos's gentle sort of run through those last couple of days. Well, last couple of days, nearly the whole rally, because they could gather a little bit of data from the engine. I have no idea what somebody was thinking about, but I was told it was running incredibly high boost by the end of that rally, and Carlos was driving it so gently and so slowly right down at the bottom of the end, the engine potentially, it's at this point now supposition, but I'm fairly sure of my ground that the engine just got heavily loads at lower RPM than it normally would, and that's what took it out, and it finally been. Uncannily, it blew in the last few yards of the rally. Could the thing not have just held on an extra minute, got out onto the road section, and then just had a nice easy drive down the road? You know, it had nothing to do after that.
Would that thing have started again, George? Or had it disintegrated?
There was a rod out through the side of the block.
That windscreen had
really?
Gone. I have to say as well, it's about 2 years before I started getting involved in rallying, but I remember the images of, as I now know, it was Moya who was smashing his helmet through. I always thought it was Carlos Sainz until relatively recently. Which I thought just showed how annoyed, is the word I'm going to use, off he was. And it just, that image, that frustration is an historic rally image.
Without wishing to name drop, I spoke to the King of Spain this afternoon. And we briefly chatted because, of course, he was announced as a team owner and driver of an Extreme E team, which was very exciting. But I chatted to him about that for a bit, and then we talked about Elvin, because we forget that Gwyndaf Evans, Elvin's father, was actually a teammate of Carlos's at Ford. Mm-hmm. And I asked, as I ask everybody, after just 7 rounds this year, you know, would Elvin deserve the championship? In Carlos's eyes, absolutely, 100%. If you finish first, then you know you absolutely deserve to be champion. Everybody's had the same opportunity to score points, and he scored more. Potentially, he will have scored more than anybody else. So, but you know the way when you talk to Carlos, he has such a way of approaching these things, so analytical, so absolutely fascinating. But you'll be able to read lots of news from Carlos in the lead up to Dakar. And, of course, the first round of Extreme E in, I think, March next year. All of it on dirtfish.com. The one championship which Carlos was involved in going down to the final round, that actually it kind of fizzled out very, very quickly, was one of the ones that you mentioned at the top there. In 01, there were 4 of them that year. There was Carlos, who had the least amount of points. Then there was Tommy, Colin and Richard, and I'm pretty sure the 3 of them, were they not all, there was either 2 or 3 points splitting those 3, wasn't it? It was super tight at the top.
Oh, yeah.
But that was the year that Mäkinen had, the Mitsubishi had switched to the World Rally car by then. I mean, in the middle of the year, didn't they? Did they switch him over the year?
No, it was 99 that they did that. They were still driving the what was it, Evo, was it the Evo 7 or Evo 8?
2001 was their last year, wasn't it, in the WRC?
No, because Alistair went there, didn't he?
They went a bit longer. Yeah. 98, Tommy was still in the Group A car.
We were still
in the Group A car when I went there in at the end of 2001. They switched from the World Rally car at the end of 2001 to the World Rally car at the end of 2001.
It still wasn't that last evolution. I don't recall it as being one of the better evolutions of the Lancer at all. It may just be
David,
again.
I have a question. while you rack your brains, and I can hear the cogs whirring and all the bits trying to connect in your brain, and they're clearly not connecting, but that's okay. As you said, you're getting older. That's okay. You mentioned science there. That wasn't the year of the onboard fire, was it? What was the year of Rally GB where you had a chance to win?
Yeah, I think it was where something went on fire and it all started to smoke, didn't it?
And
he went off the road.
At the start of a stage. Was that not in the Citroën? Was that in the Citroën?
I thought it was in the Citroën then. One thing is quite clear here.
Yeah.
We haven't done our homework for this podcast.
Well, Lisa threw us a curveball, but it's good fun.
I like to watch you squirm.
We absolutely have to talk about 01 and that championship decider that Richard Burns won, because the way that he did it, you know, we had those four going into it. Then Carlos was, Tommy was out quite early. Carlos was never really in it. And that was the year. Oh, God, here we go again. That was the year that Carlos went off into the Marshall's cars, wasn't it?
Ooh.
And Ford withdrew all of the cars. Because Higgins was...
Yeah, that's right, it was.
Mark Higgins was right up there and probably going to win the event, as Higgy probably should have done, because he was such a legend. And unfortunately, he got withdrawn.
Seriously, Higgins was going... You had a chance
He may not have won it, Colin, if you're going to be pedantic about it, but he was certainly... He had enough talent to win it.
I'll tell you why I'm getting excited, David, because... It goes back to another debate stroke argument I had with some people earlier this week about R5 cars and R5 Plus, one of George's favourite topics, and about your introducing an affordable top-level formula that would allow us to have the likes of the Higginses and the likes of the Jorge Ricaldes and the likes, I suppose, of the Possum Borns from Argentina. You're actually having a run in a world.
Local heroes.
And, you know, and someone said, well, you know, they'd be lucky to get top five or six finishes. Now, that may be correct, and I think that would be pretty good. But, yeah, you know, local heroes did win rallies in the past, or they certainly at least challenged for rally wins, didn't they?
Oh, they did, and, you know, you mentioned them there, you know, the likes of Ricalde and people like that. And, you know, every year when I started out watching the RAC, and I'm sure it's the same for us all, you know, you'd look to the likes of Russell Brooks and Jimmy McRae and David Llewellyn, and every year you'd think this year. I remember when Jimmy got that Toyota Celica, the GT4, that he had it in probably 88, and then Llewellyn had it in 89 and 90. And the hype and the build-up of thinking, crikey, this could be it, this could be the year. And then ultimately there was a little bit of disappointment again. But yeah, you know, it was possible because the likes of a Sunbeam Lotus or RS 1800 or those kind of cars were affordable, and they were on a pretty much a level playing field with the factory cars. And now, you know, we're a world away. You know, you're looking at, you know, just ridiculous amounts of money to try and hire, if you're even allowed to hire, which actually I suppose you are right now, to hire a Rally 1 car. But, you know, the level of technology and the aero and everything in the car, you're not going to get in that car and finish anywhere near the podium. You know, you'd be lucky to get a top six or a top 10 as a local area. So you're quite
right.
Are
you saying that rallying's moved far away from its roots of being a road car that goes out there to compete?
A very, very, very long way. And, you know, I think that the argument for Rally 2 and Rally 2 Plus, what was known as R5, is dead on in that respect, because it would encourage people. You know, if you've got a car that's costing no more than €250,000, you can hire them considerably cheaper. The parts and the maintenance of that car is going to be cheaper per event. And you're going to get people like the Higginses and, you know, the Matt Edwards and these kind of people just giving it a go.
But basically, rally cars are supposed to be road cars that, with a little bit of tinkering,
Lisa,
anybody compete, and the local heroes will be able to compete on a level playing field.
And we will see some of those in the Rally 2 category in Monza this week, bringing us back to Monza this year's championship decider. So I've done there.
Smooth.
Yeah, that
was very, very skilled.
Segway.
Where is our
it's almost a broadcaster now, isn't he?
Yeah, right.
Are you saying it's a real championship decider this weekend?
I was not so sure until I spoke to Ogier, and he said we were talking about the weather and the conditions and the fact that there could be some snow coming in and all his great excitement.
Wow.
and he said, you know, the championship is open still, and it is, because, you know, Ogier has to shoot for the stars here. He has to go for the rally win, 5-point power stage, do that, and he has taken immediately, he's taken 8 points out of Elvin. And that puts real pressure on Elvin. Like Ogier said, you know, Elvin will have to drive a strong rally. And the pressure, according to Sebastian, is all on Elvin right now, because, you know, do you want to be the hunted or do you want to be the hunter? And for sure, you know, I think when you are that hunted driver, you know, you're immediately a little bit more on the defensive, listening for things from the word go, whereas Ogier is just bring it, you know, and absolutely crack on.
How long has it been since we had a rally with everybody starting from the same lack of knowledge?
Well, a brand new rally. When did we last have a brand new rally?
Chile, it would have been Chile.
On that basis,
Thierry Neuville's got the most experience because he knows what mistakes he can make on a brand new rally.
Thierry
no pressure
and
there,
Danny
Thierry.
And
not to do.
They've all done Monza, haven't they? You know,
yeah,
and
they have.
Let's not forget this. You know, it's going to be a different style of rally at Monza, but it's still using the same road, still using the same curbs, the same everything. They know. If it rains, they know what tyre to use. They've got data on, you know, where the brake temperatures are going to get to and all of that stuff. Whereas, you know, Ogier, Evans, Tanak, a lot of these boys haven't been there. So there will be a small, and it's a bit of familiarity. You know, the fact that Thierry and Danny and Mikkelsen, another one, has been there and knows exactly what to expect when they go out onto that stage. It will give them an advantage until we get to Saturday, when with these three, and having seen some photos, they look just like proper Monte Carlo stages.
Oh, they're tremendous.
Have you seen the weather forecast?
I was salivating. No, I have not looked. Tell us.
George, the forecast is for the next few days in, I think it's the middle stage in that loop on Saturday that goes up and across the top. The forecast is for actually quite an accumulation of snow over the next 2 or 3 days. So that'll be interesting. We don't want too much snow, because if there's too much snow, they'll cancel it.
This is the point, though, that as we reported on dirtfish.com, Michelin are taking snow tires. Not the ones with studs, but a proper winter, essentially the Monty snow tire without the stud. But at the moment, they're not actually allowed to use them, because they've nominated the soft and the hard compound dry tire, and obviously they've got the wet the tire that's always in the package for tarmac rallies. There isn't a fourth tire option. So essentially, if the snow does come, Michelin, Arnaud Rémy said that, you know, they want to have the tires in the truck so that if the snow does come, they can talk to the FAA, they can talk to the teams, and they can potentially put this forward as a way that we don't have to cancel those stages, which is great for Michelin runners. But, you know, does Pirelli do the same thing?
Pirelli, I've been told today, have taken snow tyres as well, David. So that's news that's come out today. So the snow tyres are there with Pirelli and with Michelin.
So technically, as long as we can get buy-in from the FAA and the teams, you know, there's no reason why snow should shut those stages.
Yeah, here's where it gets interesting, though. There are some teams that would, and I'm not going to name any teams, but there are some teams that would like to see those stages running.
Yeah.
Others who it would actually work better for them if they didn't run. They didn't run. So to get buy-in from the teams over a decision like that,
it's nearly impossible.
Nearly impossible.
Need to do it before the event starts.
Well, before the event starts, you won't get buy-in either, George, because... You know, Okay, well,
then,
we'll see.
Then it, FIA just has to make a statement before the rally, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's the, you won't get consensus. You absolutely won't. Because the team that's leading the Manufacturers' Championship is going to want to run as few kilometres as possible. And when we're talking about stages which have massive potential...
Compromised conditions.
They absolutely, if there's any chance... George, we talked about this in Turkey, didn't we? And remember, you were getting your spades out to dig holes in the roads to get stages cancelled.
Before anyone thinks I'm some sort of dreadful cheat, it's all things that have been done in the past. It's been I'm not a dreadful cheat. It's been done by team managers in the past. Lancia, British Leyland. Well, British Leyland before it was British Leyland. I don't know what they used to be. Austin.
It's going to be fascinating. But the other point I wanted to make, David, is that, okay, the stages around the Monza circuit, it's fascinating when you do a bit of research into Monza. Do you know, it was the largest walled park in Europe for quite some time. And it's not just a circuit. It's a circuit with some amazing link roads, but it's still slightly Mickey Mouse, those stages around the circuit. Now, you look back at those type of stages over the past, say, 5 or 10 years, and there is a propensity for drivers to make mistakes, probably even more so than they're in normal stages. So from Elvin Evans' point of view, you know, it's those nagging...
It's difficult.
Really difficult. Really, really difficult. Yeah.
It is, and, you know, we've seen Elvin make... I'm sure, has he made a mistake on the seafront in Salou before?
He has, in the R5 car, the DMAC car. Or was it the World Rally car, maybe? Maybe it was in the World Rally car. It was almost the final corner,
those stages where you've got big straw bales, you've got concrete bollards, you know, the speed is slow, but it doesn't, you know, all you've got to do is tweak. You know, we saw again Ogier in Sardinia, where he caught the steering was open and he caught the wheel on a concrete block or something. And that's it. You know, it doesn't have to be a high speed impact, just the tiniest, smallest thing. You've got to be so neat and so tidy to do it. I do have, if you stay on the line, caller, I've got it here actually. Steve Jones, the absolute legend that is Rallying UK, at Rallying UK. If you don't follow him, you really should follow him.
Absolutely.
He has provided the most incredible spreadsheet of who has to do what. And I can tell you, if Ogier does the perfect rally and wins everything, he will end up with 127 points. If Elvin is second, he doesn't need any power stage points at all. He will still be champion. If he is third, he wouldn't be champion. He'd have missed it by a point.
Wow.
Well, even with power stage points?
If he doesn't score, Ogier would have
banked them. Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. So, but if Elvis takes two or three... Yeah, I mean, if he's on the podium and he's taking two or three power stage points, he's fine. He's absolutely fine. But it is... The pressure is there for him, you know. If Ogier does win, you know, there's no way that Elvin can hang around. He's got to be up there. But we've seen it, you know. We saw with Monte Carlo this year. He immediately felt comfortable in that car on that kind of Saturday stages, the stages that we're going to see on Saturday. He found comfort in the car straight away, and that hasn't gone away. You know, he's become more familiar with the car. One thing that the drivers, that all three Toyota drivers and, of course, Tanak, are struggling for, are lacking, perhaps not struggling for, they're lacking is time in tarmac spec, because we haven't had too many tarmac rallies this year. In fact, we've had none.
What, Monte Carlo?
Monte's not pure tarmac.
It's not pure tarmac, and Tanak obviously only got a few stages, didn't he, before he unceremoniously dumped it off the road, launched it off the road, so... No, yeah. David, what you're talking about, that spreadsheet, what it shows, you know, is that it's no walk in the park for Elvin Evans. You know,
no.
he can't just say, okay, well, I'm going to put around there. If I finish fifth or sixth or fourth or fifth, that's fine. You know, if he wants to keep the destiny of the World Championship in his hands, then he has to absolutely stay on it this weekend and get the result and force the result, if you like. You know, it is going to be fascinating.
But when we saw him in Wales last week, Col, or the week before, or whenever it was, that's exactly what his intention is.
Yeah.
You know, he is not going there thinking second, third, 3 points from there, 2 points from there, that makes, yep, then he has, it, forget that. You know, he's going there to win the rally.
What he's doing is he's just, the approach to this rally is no different from the approach to the six previous rallies we've had this year. It is exactly the same approach. And if he does that, he will do enough for sure. Remember, he's had what? He's had two wins. He's had a third. He's had three fourth places, I think. So, you know, he should, with that approach, he should be able to secure the championship. And it would be quite some win. It really would.
And, you know, the other thing that I think is really important for Elvin is, you know, there has been a huge amount of chatter. You know, we've seen people like Thierry and stuff sort of detracting a little bit, saying, you know, it's not a real one. It's not a real win. It's not a real championship. If Elvin Evans goes out and wins round seven, he's won three of seven rounds. Yeah. He is, by any measure, a worthy champion, 100%. So it gives him this opportunity to turn around and give a two-fingered salute to anybody who doubts him. And I'm sure there would be an element that he'd want to do that. And again, Ogier said exactly the same. You know, he said he wouldn't, if he wins this championship, he won't hold it in the same way that he's had his other championships. But, you know, this last round does give everybody a chance to say, there, look, you know, I'm quickest, new rally for us all, and look what I've done.
Yeah, it'll be great. It really will. I'm really, really looking forward to it. David, that little ping in the background there, was that my message coming through to you?
It's me. It was me. But don't worry, I can remove pings beautifully. People will listen to this and go, what ping?
Really? Wow. Yeah. Oh, wow. Your software is remarkable, Lisa.
No, my skills are remarkable, but I do think that does make it a good time to kind of start rounding it up. It's going to be an incredible conclusion to the season regardless, but that won't be the end of the Spin the Rally pods that we're going to bring you. As you probably guessed, last time we were on, we mentioned we wanted to talk about new technology. Excuse me. And boy, have we got a conversation to have about new technology, lads. That's possibly what we need to talk about next.
Yeah. Or maybe we perhaps should talk about what exactly happens this weekend next. Let's just keep putting green off for a couple of weeks. And just before we go, we should also absolutely mention that, of course, it's not just a two-horse race. Thierry Neuville and Ott Tanak both have a chance of winning a championship this weekend, but, you know, all hell would have to break loose. And essentially both Toyotas would have to retire.
Stranger things have happened in rallying.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, they certainly have. And, of course, we've got the Manufacturers' Championship, and we've got the Junior Championship, and we've got, good Lord, we've got WRC 2 and WRC 3.
Do you know, it's all happening, David.
It's all happening.
Are you guys going out there? Obviously, you're going out there.
Yeah, all going to be very excited there.
And what are you allowed to do when you're out there?
Watch rally cars. Oh, no.
I'm not sure about that. Get excited, George. Talk to rally drivers, get excited, and get really excited about the weather. That is going to be probably my main topic of discussion this weekend.
As Brits call it, doesn't take us a lot. No. It doesn't take a lot to get us excited about the weather, does
That's very
it?
True. That's
and
very
at least
true.
Colin will not have his hideous feet on show in those wretched sandal shoe things that he always used to wear at a stage end.
Are you even taking them, Col?
No, I tell you what I have bought, though.
It could be quite warm in Monza, though. In the centre of Milan, they'll go down well. They would be appreciated by the centre of Milanese. Milan.
What I've bought, David, and you haven't seen these, I've bought myself a nice pair of leather hunter wellies. They are very, very fetching. And
you're coming
going
in leather wellies?
Leather wellies, they're really cool. Really cool boots.
That's, which sort of website did you find those on? Sorry, lower the tone.
You've been listening to Spin the Rally Pod. I'm just going to fade them out at this point as they start tearing strips out of each other. If you want to get in touch with more things rallying, at Dirtfish Rally is the way to contact the team. But that's it for this episode. Thank you.
Thanks, Liz.
Thank you.
Leather wellies.
No, honestly, guys.